All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Oh boy, I forgot my security blanket. This segment's going to be a tough one, Aaron. Just wanted to let you know ahead of time. Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Wednesday, December 7th. Aaron walks away out of the screen picture as soon as I said this is going to be a rough segment, abandoning me in my hour of need.
I promise, I wasn't running away. I was just turning off the fan that I had on here.
I realized as we're coming out of the break, I'm like, wait a minute. I went to go fill my coffee cup and I didn't bring it back.
Oh, no.
And, you know, I'm still fighting a bit of a head cold here, dry mouth, like to have the cup of coffee nearby. So I quickly, as the intro was playing, I went to see if I could grab at least my water bottle. That's not where I normally put it. I'm already set to tell you about the, you know, the keyboard issues, which are, you know, why you're hearing this clickety clack, you know, as I'm typing notes here because my other keyboard up and died and haunted me. And so then when I say I'm going to have some issues, Aaron just walks out of the picture. I'm like, all right. I see how this is going to go. It's the equivalent for him of how back at the college radio station, I would play the live version of Freebird, which was 17 minutes long. And that way I could go across the street to the McDonald's when it was on Water Street at UW-Eau Claire at the time and go grab a burger and come back. And the song would still be playing. And sometimes I envision Aaron is just going to like flip things on and go, all right, I'm going to disappear for 17 minutes. I'll see you when it's time for the next break.
I mean, I could. I probably could.
I know you could. don't think I haven't thought about that. This is the part where I say coming up this hour. And if I use my clickety clackety keyboard to get to it, Jeff Smith will be here, our friend, the state senator from the Eau Claire area, because there is a new report out about the state budget surplus, just how big it has gotten and how much good could be done with it. The surplus has really grown. What it needs are grown-ups in the legislature to deal with it. If you want to reach us and take the burden off of me talking all this time, the phone number is 715-388-7155. I think I pretty well cleared the decks at 7:30. So from 7:30 to 7:45, if you've got something on your mind, until I come up with a great topic, it's going to be all yours if you want to call in or send me a note, radio@upnorthnewswi.com, which reminds me, one of the things we don't talk about nearly enough in terms of promotion. We give you the phone number. We give you the email address. I haven't said nearly enough about all the ways you can listen to this program or any of the others across the Civic Media Network. And I say that because we had a meeting yesterday. Here's a little bit behind the curtain here at the radio station about the format of the podcasts. We turn each of these hours, every hour of radio becomes a podcast. So that if you can't listen on Bull Falls Radio in Wausau or Lake Erin Amory or whatever, you know, wherever you're listening, you can get it as a podcast instead. Well, we're trying to get some uniformity, some consistency in our show descriptions and things like that. So we have to kind of map out our topics and put them in a document so they can be pasted in. The upshot of all this is I'm supposed to know what I'm talking about before it actually comes out of my mouth. And that form of planning is sometimes kind of alien to me. I was at a Christmas party last night for my wife's workplace up in Rice Lake, and somebody asked me about the show and how you put it together. And I used the analogy of when I was on the speech team in high school, of course, me, nerd, debate team, speech team, my category of choice was original oratory. Because I loved writing and delivering speeches. You write an 8-minute speech, you deliver that 8-minute speech, and you try to make it better and better. My coaches kept wanting me to go into improv, where instead you're given a topic and you've got 30 minutes to prepare, you know, an 8-minute speech, not, you know, a week or whatever the case may be. And I never wanted to do it. And now here I am doing it for a living. When, you know, again, I do map out a lot of the show, a lot of the topics, because I'm a news junkie. That's what I do. That's what you count on, is what's happening in the world and what does it mean to me. But every so often, when we've gone a little shorter with a topic than we planned to, Aaron says those frightening words during the commercial break. He'll say to me, what are we talking about next? And I'll say, I don't know. And I will quickly pull up Twitter or the AP wire. And that's when you go into improv And a great example of that was yesterday with Ron Johnson, with the story coming out that he was going to help House Republicans with their investigations. It's timely. It's important. It needs to be passed along, and it needs to be done so on short notice and to sound halfway intelligent. Could I have mapped that out ahead of time and put it in the show notes? No, I could not. Because sometimes, like I said, you and I learn together what's coming up next, as long as it's somewhat relevant to the news, somewhat entertaining, and invites your input. And that's what we do right here at 715-388-7155 or radio at upnorthnewswi.com. The Christmas party that I was at yesterday was noteworthy that it was, it reminded me of the, there's things that you only have at certain times of year, you know, food and drink wise. And that, you know, every house party is a little bit different. And that means some of the recipes are different. For example, the hosts who did a wonderful job last night, but, you know, they make their old fashions a little bit different than I make my old fashions. And I really appreciated the host kind of offering the glass with great trepidation, going, you know, I hope this is all right. And it was. You can't really go wrong with an old fashioned in Wisconsin too much. Where you can go wrong is if you order an old fashioned outside of Wisconsin, because then you're going to get a Manhattan, because bartenders outside of Wisconsin don't know the difference. So my great thanks to all the party hosts out there who do what they can to make their folks feel welcome during this holiday season. Jeff Smith is coming up after this break on Up North News Radio.
When you have a political party that has no problem lying, where they figure the end justifies the means, unfortunately, that has an impact in politics.
Yeah, Ron. Welcome back. This is Up North News Radio for a Wednesday, December 7th. I'm Pat Kreitlow, former state senator, talking to current state senator Jeff Smith from the Eau Claire area. I don't know. I guess, Jeff, do you mind if I say the Eau Claire area? Do I always have to say town of Brunswick? You know, some legislators are funny that way.
It all depends on the situation. So, yes, I am in the Eau Claire area.
Okay. I always wondered about that with the titles that we give people in the news business. For example, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, it always says R. Rochester. I don't know how many people know that, you know, Rochester is a town in Racine County, if they think there's a city like that. And so I always wonder if we should just go with the nearest larger city or not. But look, there's nobody in Eau Claire that doesn't know you by now. I mean, your head's been on billboards. You're a big deal at this point.
My head's on some people's platter too.
Some people's sticks and targets and things like that. How are you? Was Thanksgiving good?
Thanksgiving was great. We had a big gathering here at our house on Thanksgiving.
Well, that's awesome. How about you? It was lovely. Anytime I can get both daughters and all four grandkids under one roof, that's a beautiful thing, even if it's only for, you know, about 48 hours. But that's awesome. So I was very happy to have that happen and, you know, get that little break after the election and now start to work toward the new legislature and the new Congress, maybe some new topics. And definitely some of the same old topics. There will be a state budget to work on. And there is this surplus that is just growing and growing. And it's something that will be topping north of $6 billion by the time this is all said and done. And Jeff, there are so many ways to craft a win-win out of this. And the Wisconsin Policy Forum put out a report yesterday that, you know, my words, not theirs, again, spells out so many ways to get a win-win out of this. Jeff, what's your confidence level that Republicans and Governor Evers and legislative Democrats can craft a win-win out of all this by June 30th?
Well, it's an interesting question because win-win, wow. Maybe there will be an attitude change after this election. We're entering a second term of a Democratic governor, and maybe this Republican-led legislature will finally think maybe we better get something done. I sure hope so, Pat. I mean, you know, I was just looking back at October, when the budget was expected to be $4.3 billion or something like that, as a surplus. Now we're at $6.6 billion, but even then, the governor was proposing, you know, a tax cut of 10% for working families, restoring the homestead tax credit, expanding property tax relief, cutting gas prices, capping the copay costs of insulin, creating a caregiver tax credit. I mean, we're talking kind of a Republican wish list here, but somehow, because it was an election season, they weren't willing to even budge on anything or have that special session to consider these things. So it's over now. Let's see if we can get something done.
Okay, but to do that, to get a win-win, the usual political definition of that is that it means that each side also has to accept something that they don't like. We already know that on the Republican side, the thing they'd have to accept that they don't like is probably a big increase in funding for public schools because it's so necessary. When I look at the things that Republicans would insist on and what would Democrats reluctantly agree to, that one's a little bit tougher for me because there's things on there that just seem so non-negotiable. And I'm not asking you to negotiate in public. I don't want you to get in trouble with, you know, the new majority, minority leader, Melissa Agard. But I'm sure you all have talked about this. And what kinds of areas do you think might lead to some folks in your caucus going, well, I don't like it, but if we get all these other things, I'm willing to go along with it. My first thought is it's going to be increased support for voucher schools as well, even though they don't have a great track record, but I'm not sure if any of the other options are any more palatable. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, I don't know, Pat, if we can go down that road, to be honest. I would have a problem with that. But I think I read some of the things right now already that there was, you know, we're talking about tax cuts rather than reinvesting the money into the needs of citizens. You know, the governor keeps continuing to say and has said from the day one that he took office 4 years ago was what's good for our kids is good for our state. And so, the thing I did not finish with on his proposal was $2 billion into public schools. And that was when it was $4 billion surplus. So, you know, and some of these things are the things the Republicans have been claiming they support, which is improving reading and literacy outcomes and expanding mental health services after the pandemic. And again, investing in financial literacy out of school programming. Those are things Republicans have claimed that they support when it comes to our school funding. So we're giving them things supposedly they have publicly supported. So let's just do it.
And I'm going to attack this talking point again, and not for you. You've heard me say this 1,000 times, but it needs to be said again and again until more people just don't pay attention anymore when Republicans say we should give it all back because you can spend your money better than the government can. No, you can't, because you didn't fill a pothole today. You didn't fight a fire today. You didn't teach a kid today. That's what those surplus dollars and those tax dollars are for. So anytime I hear send it back because they can spend their money better than the government, no, that's what it's there for. And when, thanks to Governor Evers shepherding this state economy through a pandemic successfully, we end up with a record surplus, then that is such an opportunity to invest in, like the report here says, increasing support for higher education, strengthen the infrastructure with roads and rural broadband, retire some debt, maintain ample reserves because there will be future recessions. But there's also reshaping the income tax or eliminating the personal property tax. I mean, everything is there so long as Republicans don't retreat to those tired talking points that equate all taxation with theft and all government spending is bad, and finally acknowledge reality that government is a necessary and good and beneficial thing to provide the services that we all rely on as a functioning society.
And, you know, and that's the problem with negotiating with ourselves. And in some ways, like I said, I think the governor did that a little bit by when his original proposal was about tax, which included tax cuts and property tax relief and the things that the Republicans like to naturally do, that he was giving them that. But the truth is, Pat, I've always believed that people don't expect that money to come back to them. They paid their taxes. They expect results from those taxes. They expect to get their road taken care of. They expect their community to be able to afford the safety officers that they so desire, whether it be fire protection or police officers. And yet now we have communities having to run referendums to afford to hire police officers and firefighters. Come on, let's actually send the money back to our communities and let them do their job.
Exactly. And the Wisconsin Policy Forum has noted in a previous report that, and again, my words, not theirs, but to sum it up, we talk about school referenda a lot, but set aside the school districts for a moment and just talk about the local units of government. And you are a former town board member, and you know how hard town boards and city councils and county boards all work. Those local units of government that have been so cash strapped, this surplus could be a game changer for putting a reset on the way that the state handles shared revenue and funds its share of local government services. Again, I'm not saying that's what will happen, but it's certainly one of those things that could be a very positive result of amassing this size of a surplus.
You know, I even had a meeting yesterday it was, with a group who were, you know, just getting us prepped. You know how that goes, Pat. From here on, we'll be getting these groups coming in and telling us, we're going to be making this ask. We're going to make making that ask, and this is how much it's going to cost. And this group doubled their ask from the previous budget from 2 years ago. And the quote was, well, the surplus looks so big, I don't think this is going to be that hard. So we're going to be getting a lot of people who have that attitude, and they're going to be going to Republicans and saying the same thing and saying, hey, you got this surplus, you know, let's finally do this. So there's going to be a lot of pressure, I think, on that, on the Republicans who do have the control of the legislature, and they have the ability to make things happen.
And yet they also have control of the districts because of the way that they've rigged the maps. And so there is much less incentive for them to negotiate in good faith and again seek that win-win, when they could instead, if they choose, simply dig in their heels and take their chances that they go to the voters 2 years from now and say, oh my gosh, look, there is now a $10 billion surplus because those Democrats won't give it back to you. And you know, that's how they're going to try to win a supermajority 2 years from now. Again, I'm not saying they will, but that to me is kind of the nightmare scenario on this, that voters actually don't punish them for squandering the surplus, but they try to appeal to more voters to say to them, yeah, we want it all back.
Well, on that point, Pat, I just have to say this. The voters need to finally realize who has been in control of the state for the last 30 years. 28 years since 1994, when the Republicans won back the majority in the legislatures of most of the states in this country, including Wisconsin, and they haven't given it up. You know, 2 years out of the last 28, Republicans or Democrats have had the control in Wisconsin. 2 years out of 28, so 26 years. So who is responsible for where we're at? The voters have to start realizing we have to give them a little more civics lesson here to help them realize who's been in charge, who's responsible for what their troubles may be, and how they can fix that is vote them out.
There you go. And I think that there's still plenty of folks in Wisconsin, believe it or not, and I do believe this, because they don't pay close attention to the news or to politics or anything. I still think there are plenty of people that would be surprised to hear that from you, that Republicans have been in charge by and large for the lion's share of the past couple of decades. And that, you know, I think Democrats need to do a better job of pointing that out and saying, it's about time you hold them responsible for what they've done. And we'll see if that's how things shape up. Jeff, I got just a few seconds left, and this just came across my screen. My predecessor at TV13, former news anchor John Freud, passed away in California this week at the age of 89. I worked with him for about a year before he retired, and just a great guy to work with. Couldn't be more gentle and friendly, and I'm sure you had good interactions with John Freud as well.
Yeah, I remember John Freud quite well. He was you're right, a very gentle, classic news anchor. Like the guy that succeeded him.
The guy that succeeded him was a jerk, and then they go and give him a radio show after that. I don't know. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. Talk to you a little later.
Thanks, Pat.
All right. Have a great day. All right. Back after this. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Well, here's a fun fact for you. In 1934, no Democratic senators lost re-election. Since 1934, every president, Democratic or Republican, has seen at least one senator from their party lose re-election in every midterm cycle. Joe Biden becomes the first president since FDR not to lose a single senator because of Raphael, the Reverend Warnock, winning in Georgia yesterday. Mandela Barnes, Lieutenant Governor, writes that he's so proud of Reverend Warnock, the volunteers, his team, and everyone who made calls, knocked doors, did the work to make sure we can deliver for working people across the country. It's your work that made the difference. The country is a better place because of you. That from Mandela Barnes, who unfortunately came up just short in defeating our own Herschel Walker here in Wisconsin. What's this really mean? Is there a big difference? Yes, it was. Yes, the Democrats had control with a 50-50 Senate because of Vice President Harris, but there was still a power sharing arrangement because of it. And so right now, the big difference with the Democrats having 51 votes is there will be things like swifter confirmation of executive branch and judicial nominees. Republicans lose some of the ability to gum up the process in committee as essentially being, you know, co-chairs of committees. Also, you've got one extra vote to play with if Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema decide to be a pill on this issue or that issue. So that's the difference that's been made as Herschel Walker gets thrown for a 3-point loss, as one person tweeted, or as another one said, Herschel Walker has entered the portal. I don't think it's the transfer portal that he would have had in college, but close enough. Let's move to a different football player, former Green Bay Packer quarterback Brett Favre. He no longer is getting a demand from the state of Mississippi to repay $1.1 million for an unfulfilled pledge of public speeches. That's the good news. The bad news is that the Mississippi Department of Human Services now is demanding $5 million from Favre and a university sports foundation in that state, saying that money from an anti-poverty program was improperly used to pay for a volleyball arena at the University of Southern Mississippi.
Well, I'd say that's great news.
Why is that?
Because it's disgusting that it happened in the first place. They should charge him more.
Yes.
That's my and personal opinion.
The volleyball project was a pet project of Favre's. He pledged to lead fundraising efforts for it, but previous filings in a civil lawsuit show text message exchanges between Favre and others about directing money to the volleyball facility from a nonprofit organization that had human services contracts. But until Monday, the human services lawsuit had not sought to actually recoup the money for the facility. Favre is an alum of the University of Southern Mississippi. His daughter started playing volleyball at the school in Hattiesburg in 2017. The volleyball facility and wellness center was completed in late 2019. And a lot of this money was federal money, from money from you and from me, that Congress allocates to all the states for various programs. In this one, it was a program designed to help the very poorest of the poor in Mississippi so that they could, you know, have a roof over their heads and afford food and things like that and get health care. But it was, and it wasn't just this volleyball project. Mississippi is awash in controversy right now over many different ways that that money was instead siphoned away to other uses. Now, Favre was being targeted by the Department of Human Services for paying back a separate pot of money, $1.1 million, that he was going to use, and money that came from contracts that spent money from the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families Anti-Poverty Program. However, it appears that even though Favre only produced a single 20-second radio commercial for that $1.1 million, it has been repaid or recouped, although he does owe interest on it. But Human Services says in Monday's court filing, Favre has not repaid $5 million in welfare funds, quote, that he orchestrated, end quote, for a group to pay for the University of Southern Mississippi Athletic Foundation and satisfy his guarantee to fund the construction of a volleyball facility. Favre's attorney said in a statement that the department's new $5 million demand against Favre is groundless. Eric Hirschman said the department left out key facts about the transfer of money and that it was done all with the full knowledge and consent of then-Governor Phil Bryant. Hirschman said that a private citizen like Brett Favre could have any liability under these circumstances is baseless. This is Mississippi's largest public corruption case in decades. Previous players in this scam have already pleaded guilty to charges of misspending welfare money. Three of them are awaiting sentencing and have agreed to testify against others who are part of the investigation. Favre, as you probably know, grew up in Keel, Mississippi, played football at the University of Southern Mississippi before a long career with the Green Bay Packers. That included Super Bowl 31. They can't take that away from us. Before he then went to the New York Jets in 2008, and then 2 years with the Minnesota Vikings, and then what was supposed to be a quiet and respectful retirement in Mississippi. But again, trying to play with money that's not yours, whether it's well-intentioned or not, is going to get you in trouble. As we mentioned yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court today is taking up a case with the potential to fundamentally reshape elections for Congress and the presidency. The justices will hear arguments over the power of state courts to strike down congressional districts drawn by legislatures because they violate the state constitutions. Republicans from North Carolina, who are bringing the case to the high court, argue that there's a provision in the Constitution known as the Election Clause that gives state lawmakers total control over the times, places, and manner of congressional elections, including redistricting, and that state courts are not part of the process. It's a concept called independent legislature theory, or independent state legislature theory. It's never been adopted by the court. In fact, it's been struck down by the court repeatedly in the past. But four of the current right-wing judges have signaled approval of the concept, and it's what's led to this case being heard, and where there could potentially be a very broad ruling that could threaten hundreds of election laws around the country, require separate rules for federal and state elections on the same ballot, and it could lead to new efforts to redraw congressional districts in order to maximize partisan advantage. The court's decision in North Carolina also might suggest how these justices will deal with another part of the Constitution, the one that gives legislatures the authority to decide how electors are appointed after presidential elections. That provision, the Electors Clause, was central to efforts to try to overturn the outcome of the 2020 election. You will recall that a big part of Trump's coup plot was, if Mike Pence had gone along with it, to either on his own claim that electoral votes that people thought were going to go to Biden should actually go to Trump, including in Wisconsin, or cast doubt and kick it back to state legislatures so that the Wisconsin legislature, again, gerrymandered and controlled by Republicans, would be able to name Wisconsin's electors rather than the voters. State courts have become the only legal forum for challenging partisan congressional maps since the Supreme Court ruled in 2019 that those lawsuits cannot be brought in federal court in another case that touched Wisconsin, a case that was, it was essentially a knife in the back of democracy by Justice Anthony Kennedy, who since has abruptly retired, and others. And so as a result, it becomes that much tougher to challenge these maps that any non-political, normal person would look at and say, these are ridiculous. And I know you've seen them. Again, they're called gerrymanders because the original ones, you know, reminded people of a salamander. You know, they're long, they're thin, they're curly on one side or another. They have nothing about them that says this is a single contiguous area that is electing its congressional representative. Instead, they snake all over the place. To a lesser degree in Wisconsin, but still, to take you back 10 years, when they rigged the maps in 2011, what they did with the third congressional district was swap some territory with the seventh congressional district up north, where some guy named Pat Kreitlow was challenging the incumbent Republican, Sean Duffy. And by snaking the third district up into central Wisconsin a bit, kind of giving it this curly tail up into, you know, Portage County and things like that, it took away a big base of Democratic votes. It wasn't done so that a contiguous area could have the same congressional representative. It was clearly done for partisan advantage. And yet the Supreme Court ruled that while gerrymandering as a way to exclude voters based on race is clearly illegal, they couldn't say the same thing for gerrymanders based on a partisan advantage, even though that may be easily displayed and demonstrated as harmful to minority voters, and frankly, just harmful to voters overall, that the will of all of the voters in central Wisconsin can't be abided by because you've split up those votes. The same can be said for communities. There are counties and communities that have been split up into 2, 3, 4 or more districts as a way to dilute the Democratic votes and to make the district Republican, even though one particular area should be majority Democratic. It's exactly what was done in I believe it was Alabama. Was it Alabama or Mississippi? I really wish those two would merge because I get them confused enough anyway, and as do other folks. And again, the map was ruled illegal, a gerrymander. But the court case was delayed to the point where that map is what was used this year in the elections. And so it really comes down to, should state courts remain open for these kinds of rulings? Justice Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, Clarence Thomas wrote earlier this year, they would have allowed the Republican drawn maps to be used this year. Alito going so far as to say there should be a limit on the authority of state courts to countermand actions taken by the state legislatures when they are prescribing rules for the conduct of federal elections. Kavanaugh has written separately about the need for federal courts to police the actions of state courts when it comes to federal elections. In North Carolina, Republican lawmakers won't have to wait for the court's decision to produce a new congressional map. But even as Democrats won half of the state's 14 congressional seats, Republicans have seized control of the state Supreme Court. And two newly elected Republican justices in North Carolina gave them the 5-2 edge that makes it more likely than not that the court will now uphold a map with more Republican districts. In other words, because you have politicized the state Supreme Court race, it is that much easier for politicians in justices' robes to make decisions that are hostile to voters, hostile to communities of color, hostile to democracy. So have I mentioned that there is a state Supreme Court election coming up in Wisconsin? I probably have, but I'm going to say it again, because as much as we all don't like hyperbole, this one again is the most important state Supreme Court race in Wisconsin history and will have immense ramifications on maps, on democracy, on voting rights, and a whole host of other areas. And it's not a partisan election, but it's sure going to look like one. But it all depends on who turns out to vote in February and April. More after this. This is Up North News Radio. All right, it's time to check in with Todd Alba, see what's coming up on his program on so many of these fine Civic Media radio stations. How are you, sir?
I am well. How about you, Pat?
Good, good. I caught a little bit of your show yesterday with your old boss, Dale Schultz, the former Republican state rep. I can only imagine what it would be like if I could get some of my old Capitol team on there. If Jeff Barrant, who's now a big deal with the UW system, or Matt Pagel or Kathy Devine, you know, if I got them in, I don't think the show would survive, because I don't know what your crew is like. I had the best team in the Capitol, but I also had the most sarcastic team in the Capitol by a country mile. And I wish we could have had a radio show in the mornings with those discussions.
Right. I mean, I tell people, I've had a couple of my former colleagues on, and they're like, oh, I don't know if I want to come on or not. I said, you know, just think about it this way. What did we do for the first half hour every morning in Dale's office? We sat and drank coffee and talked about what was happening. I said, we do that now, only you have a microphone, you know? And
Where you can't say all the words that you would say.
Right.
We
exactly.
laughed about how the first thing, our office was very food centric.
Okay.
So there'd be a little bit of a small talk, but by and large, by about 8:05, somebody was saying, where are we going for lunch? And then there would be this meticulous breakdown. If somebody suggested this place, like, oh no, their sandwich doesn't have this, you need this kind of chipotle mayonnaise or whatever the case. I mean, they were such foodies over there and just would tear each other apart for making a bad food choice. And again, Food Network should have hired us to do programming there.
That would have been fantastic. In Dale's office, in the Schultz office, it kind of started when he was Senate Majority Leader. And, you know, you kind of get to, if you want to, you can kind of push the Senate rules a little bit if you're Majority Leader. And so you're not the only real tree in the Capitol, like live holiday Christmas tree, is supposed to be the one out the rotunda. We thought it'd be cool to support our local tree farmers. So we brought in a live tree into Dale's, a small one. And then we started something called the Schultz Holiday Party. And we invited Republicans and Democrats. And, of course, a lot of people in Dale's caucus, a lot of senators, like, what in the heck are you inviting Democrats over? And it was actually a lot of fun. So we continued that even after he was no longer Majority Leader. We kind of have this Schultz Holiday Party, and we had Democrats, Republicans, and staffers, and senators, and reps all stop by. And actually, it was really fun because it was like, oh, look, we could just enjoy the holidays and tell stories and not worry about if you have an R or a D behind your name. And it was a lot of fun.
And refreshing.
Right.
And frankly, there was, it maybe was on the down slope, you know, during my time there, 2006 to 2010, but it has sunk so much lower now that, I mean, it's not just rare. And Jeff Smith, who I had on earlier, you know, would affirm this. It's not just rare to see bipartisan gatherings after hours. It's almost, you can almost be punished for it in some cases. You know,
no, I mean, we've talked before, because Scott Jensen, when he was Assembly Speaker back in the 90s, he started this, I think, Quala a little bit on the Democrat side for senators. Basically, if you were seen with someone from the opposition party having a drink at the Avenue five blocks away, you better think twice whether or not you're going to get a committee chairmanship. It's crazy.
And it makes me wonder, you know, who's going to break that? Who's going to, you know, try to overcome this toxic environment? And does it have to wait until, you know, Voss is no longer speaker, or is it going to be, you know, like a gang of four, like two Democrats and two Republicans from the rank and file who break it? Is it going to be, I'm trying to think, who's going to be the Dolly Madison? Is there going to be, you know, somebody outside the Capitol who tries to bring a more of a civic spirit to this rather than a, you know, we must fight to the death every day kind of attitude? I don't know.
I think it's going to be the younger people. I don't know. I mean, there's this young guy, a Gen Z guy from Orlando in Florida, who is the first Gen Zer to be elected to Congress. And I think he's pretty excited in Florida. I think here in Wisconsin, she's not quite Gen Z, but someone like State Representative Francesca Hong from Madison. Mm-hmm. I mean, she is a go-getter. And I mean, she is a mold breaker and just doesn't care. And I think, you know, hopefully there's going to be a young person on the Republican side with that same kind of zeal that just says, screw it. I don't care what my leadership says. I'm going to work with Francesca Hung or whoever. And we're just going to the audacity of proposing one bill jointly that might do some good in Wisconsin.
I think there's an interesting phenomenon here where some people are from very blue or very red districts. They are very safe. Mm-hmm. And then there are people like I was from a swing district. And in a swing district, you can't always take as many chances. What you need from people in a safe district, like a Francesca Hong, certainly, you know, people on the Republican side, those are the people who can, because they have, you know, security of coming and being in a safe seat, they should be the ones who after hours are trying to, you know, foster that collegiality. Mm-hmm. But they're also the ones who during election season, because they're in the safer seats, need to get out in the hinterlands up here and campaign like crazy, you know, to add to their membership. But they're the ones who can essentially, you know, help the spirit of cooperation or drive a stake through its heart. And Francesca strikes me as somebody who'd be so good at that. I don't know if she has, you know, certain Republicans that, you know, she especially gets along with, but that's a great suggestion that, you know, that she could be one of those folks that makes life better in the Capitol.
She was super active, I know, this election cycle for Democrats and helped recruit a couple of really great candidates. There was one down in the 51st Assembly District going up against Todd Novak in Dodgeville and kind of that Green County, kind of the Wisconsin Illinois border district there that kind of goes up into parts of Iowa County. And she recruited, Francesca Hung did, recruited a candidate and helped her. And I know that Sarah Godlewski from up in your neck of the woods, mm-hmm. after she yep. dropped out of the U.S. Senate race, she started, I think, a PAC, right? And helped several yes. women yep. Candidates who were really, really good. And a couple came really close to winning. So yeah, I think there is hope.
And Sarah Godlewski, by the way, is in her waning days as state treasurer. And then we're going to have her on every so often starting in January.
Oh, cool.
And talk about lifting the voices of others around Wisconsin, women who could make a difference either in civic life, political life, small business life, mm-hmm. what have you. You know, we're trying to get more of those voices. Kristen Lierley was great about reaching out to so many of the women who are running for office and, you know, giving them a platform, because you and I both know the worst thing that can happen after an election is that the losing candidates, who are really good people and are natural leaders, just walk away
yeah.
because they're so dejected. Our state needs leaders from both parties to hang in there and continue to, you know, fight for the values they believe in.
Well, I think that's what's exciting about your show is, as a former state senator, but also as a journalist, I mean, you've stayed active. You've got Up North News. You're on Civic Media. That's a great viewpoint. People like my old boss, Dale Schultz, the Republican side, Senator Tim Cullen, a Democrat, they've stayed active going around the state talking about redistricting reforms. So, yeah, you need those voices to continue out there.
I've left you all of about 15 seconds to tell me what's on your show today.
You're going to be on the first 5 minutes, and then we're also going to have Trygve Olson from the Lincoln Project, a Wisconsin native, on. So that's going to be great.
All right. Looking forward to that. Thank you so much, Todd, and enjoy the day, and I'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Sounds good, Pat. Thank you.
All right. Well, as you know, Todd Alba is next for a lot of folks along the Civic Media Radio Network. For the Madison folks, Stephanie Miller in Waukesha, it's Earl Ingram. I'm Pat Kreitler. We'll be back at 6 a.m. tomorrow. You have a great Tuesday, or Wednesday, rather. I'm going to go find my new calendar. I'm going to go find a new keyboard and talk to y'all tomorrow morning.